From the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet, it's time to take you behind the scenes in Smashville.
That's across, he scores!
This is the Preds official podcast with Thomas Willis and Brooks Bratton.
That powerful move from back of the net.
On Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Double digits. It's episode 10 of the Predators official podcast. Here for another week, Brooks Bratton alongside Thomas Willis from the 102.5 The Game studios here in Nashville, Tennessee. Good to be back from the road. I've literally just stepped off the airplane from beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. Lovely to be back here in Nashville. Always good to be back home after a long road trip, especially.
Did you get to use the slide?
The slide?
Out of the airplane.
No.
Oh, well, that's always my dream.
Well, there was
like
there was
a very, very minor emergency where no one is injured and nothing really malfunctions, and yet we still get to use the slide.
There was some confusion that there may have been because they pulled the steps up and then backed them back up. Oh. We're like, oh, where are you going with those?
You will stay.
We did circle for a little bit, though. We got a lovely tour of the city. Sure. We were doing our live traffic updates. 40 was a little heavy, as usual. 65 north moving great as we circled up around Rivergate, came in.
Could have done a live traffic report right from there.
We were trying. I was going like...
Sure.
You know, helicopter noises, of course.
Right.
But yeah, we're back. Thank goodness. The Preds are back as well, obviously. From that five-game trip out west, two wins, and then I showed up, and they proceeded to lose three games. But... we'll get into the road trip in just a bit. Another jam-packed show here on episode 10 of the Predators official podcast. Preds assistant general manager Jeff Kelty, we'll give him a phone call shortly. The thing on everybody's mind, Thanksgiving's coming up. What are we going to eat? We know you're all dying to know what our favorite side dishes are, so we're going to tell you soon. A great giveaway. I'm going to, you know what? I want to save the giveaway.
Unique.
I want suspense on this giveaway. And a slew of other topics, some more Twitter questions we'd love to get to. But as we said, fresh off the road trip, 2-2-1, a win in Colorado, an OT thriller in Dallas, a shootout loss in Anaheim, a back-and-forth heartbreak of a loss in San Jose, and then one of those in Phoenix that it's going to happen from time to time. 46 shots on goal the Preds put on Darcy Kuemper. Only one of them goes in. Nick Bonino is the guy who got it. His first of the season. He looks to the heavens as soon as it goes in. A huge relief off of his shoulders, but a hot goaltender for the Preds, and that is the final result of that road trip. So the LA Kings coming in on Saturday, a chance to get back into the win column. But some highs, some lows on the road trip, a little bit of everything.
Number one, Nick Bonino's celebration after getting his first goal of the season reminded me of the meme of Elmo with the fire behind the background, just like, oh. Anyways, congrats to him. But we've said in past shows that when things were going grand for the Preds, that we'd compliment them and praise them for it. And we also said when they faced a little adversity, we'd have to talk about it and we'd have to own it. And you're right. Overall, the road trip isn't too bad with 2-2-1. And I think particularly if you could have just gotten that win in Arizona, all of a sudden the road trip looks way better than it does.
Absolutely.
And you wrote this in the recap, but I think the team felt that they did do enough probably to get that win. I mean, like you mentioned, the 46 shots on goal, but probably should have been looking at a 3-1-1 road trip, and yet, oh man, just couldn't get that offense to fall. Like, the chances really were there, and I think for this Predators team that plays such a high-volume shot offense under Peter Laviolette, you and I know that there are games when the Preds get 45 shots on goal, and you're kind of like, okay, they were more from the perimeter, the chances weren't of that high quality. I can think of three times that Colton Sissons basically scored from 2 feet out, just by himself.
Oh yeah.
Let alone the rest of the team.
Kyle Turris hit the post in the third period. I mean, Bonino's goal would have made it 2-2. We talk about it all the time too.
Right.
It is such a game of inches, a game of centimeters, of millimeters, that if one little thing happens slightly different, we could be talking about a 3-1, 4-1 Predators win, and that's just the way it goes sometimes. I think it's important to remember that the Predators probably weren't going to go 41-0 on the road this season.
Really?
They were going to lose a road game
at
one point. 3 points it's happened now. As you mentioned, the first little bit of adversity.
Yeah.
And speaking of that adversity, Victor Arvidsson going to be out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken thumb. We learned that before the Arizona game on Thursday. PK Subban goes on IR. He's going to miss at least the next two games. And the Predators hurting a little bit. They got Kelly Yarncroke back. They got Dan Hamhuis back. Austin Watson's back in the lineup. Guys coming in and out. And it's just, again, something that's going to happen over the course of a season.
So the injury to Arvidsson happens in the Dallas game. You wrote this as well at nationalpredators.com. But looks like we won't see him back until the calendar year. I mean, at least 2019, it would appear, if you're following that 6 or 8 week timeline. And so the question for me becomes, I want to get to this in a second, but who is on that first line with Ryan Johansson and Philip Forsberg? Because even within this season, as we all know, Arvidsson was on injured reserve, returned, and then got hurt again. In those few games that he had missed preceding this latest injury, Philip Forsberg was goalless. Like, he was not playing quite at the same level. That trio, they've got like some mind meld going on or something like that, and they just know where the other two are going to be, and it's a treat to watch them. We've talked about that before. So finding that other winger, I mean, let's just go ahead and talk about it now, but I think finding that other winger is the key. So it was Kevin Fiala on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be surprised if that's the case again on Saturday to give him another shot. I want to hear from you who you think it should be, because I think I have a different answer than you might expect. For number one, I know that Craig Smith and Kyle Turris have been together a lot, but I think Craig was one of the best players for this team on offense in the first 10 games of the season. Mm-hmm. Did get a goal in the last road trip, but I think should have had more. I'd really like to see what he looks like with Johansson and Forsberg. I don't know that I've ever really seen him play with those two other guys, really. I mean, they have power play time together, or they have in the past. I'd be interested to see that. And then one that we thought we were going to get, my backup answer would be Ryan Hartman. I don't think that's gonna happen. But the second answer that I would like to go with would be Calle Järnkrok. And for the reason of, I think he is speedy enough to keep up with those other two, and yet I think he has that responsibility to allow Johansson, as the center, you have a little bit more defensive responsibility on you. And I think perhaps if you have a Calle Järnkrok there, maybe Ryan Johansson's thinking, okay, I'm free to shoot a little bit more now that Arvidsson's out, or I'm free to take another chance. Plus, throw in the other bonus factor of Calle Järnkrok can play center when needed. So if Joey ever gets kicked out of a faceoff dot, Yarncroke's there. But, I mean, who do you think could be that guy? Because this looks like it's going to be a long-term problem that Laviolette's going to have to fix over the next 2 months.
I like your proposal of Craig Smith.
Yeah.
I think that's someone, as you mentioned, he's been essentially almost glued with Kyle Turris since Turris got here mm-hmm. a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a duo that you necessarily think of breaking up. Is there going to be time over the next 6 to 8 weeks? Will there be enough time to try all these different options? And Coach Laviolette, and I guess it's kind of obvious that he would say this, but it is still interesting. I think he said this before the game in Arizona, that you have to look at more than just who's going to go up on that first line. You've also got to look at how is that going to affect the roster. For the first two games, well, not the first two games, but those first two games, once Arvidsson went back out mm-hmm. in the Dallas game, it was Colton Sissons in Anaheim and San Jose that was up there. Now, on Thursday, you get Calle Järnkrok back in the lineup, mm-hmm. which can then move some things around. Järnkrok goes on that second line with Turris and Smith. That enables Fiala to slide up and give him a chance. As you mentioned, Ryan Hartman's an option. We know Colton Sissons is an option. Can Calle Järnkrok go up there? Can Craig Smith go up there? Was Coach satisfied enough with Kevin Fiala on there on Thursday? And remember that preseason game in Florida, a small sample size, but the trio of them combined for what, 12, 13 points?
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
In the game, it was insane. We said that wasn't going to happen all the time, and we knew that Jofa was really good and they were probably going to be together. But there are certainly a lot of options up and down this lineup, and you've really got to take into consideration how that affects the other three trios too, depending on who you're breaking up and putting up there. And don't forget that Austin Watson coming back in makes a big difference too.
No, he does, and it really helps to balance the lineup. We saw Laviolette go back to the line that was so effective in round one of the playoffs against the Avalanche earlier this year, which was Bonino, Sissons, and Watson. That line was lights out in the first round of the playoffs. It wasn't there yet on Thursday night for a variety of reasons, but you would hope maybe that's what it could become. But you're right. What's difficult for Laviolette and his coaching staff over the next few months is really finding how you want to deploy your top six, because Laviolette's shown so far this season that ideally he would like to play four lines. And now, yes, the first line's getting twice as many shifts as the fourth line, but he wants to skate his fourth line against the opposition's fourth line, or he wants to be able to put strength versus strength. And so because of that, when you don't have an Arvidsson, all of a sudden you're like changing the dynamic of a line a little bit. Like, it seemed as if he wanted Järnkrok to help balance that second line on Thursday in Arizona. Well, does he need to change that? Or, you know, does he want the speed of a Ryan Hartman? Or does he want the physicality or the person that can go in front of the net and Colton Sissons up there? I think we'll see. The second question that arises because you lose Arvidsson and Subban is the power play. And I think we have to touch on it, but I think we also want to say this. Willie Donick wrote a blog for the website that you'll see here soon. And in that, he was just discussing, first off, number one, like, don't disregard how phenomenal the Predators have been at 5-on-5. Mm-hmm. 5-on-5, a point at which you play overwhelmingly the majority of hockey. Like, it's easy to focus on the power play because you see the 2 minutes go up on the clock and you're like, ah, they should score. This is it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, by far, hockey's played at 5-on-5. Like, it's not even close. But that being said, call a spade a spade. It's not been good. I have my suggestions. What do you think needs to happen to make this power play better? I know we touched on it some last game, but there have been some instances where maybe a game could have gone differently here or there. I will comment this. I saw this on Twitter. Someone was like, can you imagine how many games the Preds would have won if their power play was great? I'm like, maybe like one more, like maybe two.
They
like,
still won 13.
Yeah, so I'm like, no, they wouldn't be undefeated if it was that good either. But
I think, honestly, my number one thing may have started to be solved in Arizona.
Really?
And that was getting more pucks to the net at a rapid rate. And the thing that stuck out to me after the game is, and bless their hearts, the players and Coach Laviolette, they've been asked about it every game, as they should be. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's only so much you can say about it. But Coach Laviolette was asked about it again on Thursday. Like, do you like what you're seeing? Do you at least like the looks you're getting? And Coach was like, you know what? Tonight, I thought it looked really good. Yeah. And it was a hot goaltender. The Predators could have easily had one, had two, had maybe three power play goals last night.
Mm-hmm.
The puck movement was pretty darn good. There were a lot of chances at the net. You mentioned Colton Sissons could have had two or three right at the net mouth.
Right.
The movement on the power play, and I know that you've got to score. I get that.
Yeah.
But you've got to start somewhere, especially when you're in this situation. And getting more pucks to the net, getting more looks at the net, that really showed in Arizona. So when Roman Josi says after the game, we've just got to do a lot of what we did in that mm-hmm. game, and people say, oh, well, you know, you didn't win. Well,
right.
No, you didn't win. But you've got to start somewhere. And I think that really took a step in the right direction, the power play did against the Coyotes, with just the amount of shots, the amount of chances, the amount of looks that they had. That's closer to what they want to see.
Well, and I would say nights like Thursday are a point that I make a lot, which is you play 82 games in the regular season in the NHL for a reason, and it's to find statistical significance. And that is because it is a small rubber puck in a 4x6 frame. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, yeah. Bounces happen. I mean, entire playoff series are won by fluky balances or mm-hmm. or calls or weird plays or shots that are missed. And because of that, you're right. Like, Laviolette plays the system that he does because he's betting, and I would fully agree with him, hey, if we get 45 shots on goal of and even more chances and attempts toward the net, we're going to win the majority of games. And not only the majority of games, probably 65-70% of games. And if you do that, you're one of the best teams in the league. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to overanalyze a game on Thursday and be like, oh, like the losing streak continues. They're not playing as well as they are. I would agree with you. I would not be surprised if that Thursday's game, especially under the new constraints of the lineup, was a sign that things are happening. What I'll say is, with the loss of Subban and Arvidsson, I wonder if new personnel coming onto the power play, because it has to, because those were two guys that were clearly on the power play, I wonder if that helps shift things a little bit. For example, Matthias Ekholm's back on the power play. And that was a spot that he had early on in his career. I remember he and Seth Jones were on the second power play unit for like almost a season and a half. And whereas he's maybe not the most offensively gifted defenseman, I wonder if even just a fresh set of eyes, a fresh set of decisions being made at the point maybe shifts things around. And then the subsequent things that I think they are improving on, I would agree. I think you saw more of that on Thursday. Zone entries. Yep. You just have to get some consistency there. And again, no PK Subban to do that anymore. And I'm just meaning that to say someone else is going to be doing it. So now is that going to be attacked differently? And then finally, it's the low to high movement. So I think we've seen the puck going back and forth across the zone. It's one of those finicky things. Like when you're scoring power play goals, you're confident enough to feed it low and to force pucks inside to the slot, go up and down from point down to forward into the middle. It's when you're not getting that, you're like, oh, this could be a turnover, and you don't try it. But I love those bang-bang plays. The Winnipeg Jets do it, and honestly, the Preds do it at times mm-hmm. as well, when it's like down almost at the side of the goal to Kyle Turris. Yep. He goes quickly back up toward the slot to Craig Smith, and it's just a bang-bang play, and that can be a goal. Yep.
They had a couple of them against the Coyotes on Thursday night.
Yeah.
Quickly, you mentioned Matthias Ekholm, different guys just getting rotated in with players out of the mm-hmm. lineup. Up front, too, Kalle Järnkrok, Nick Bonino, Colton Sissons, guys that maybe don't get a lot of time on the power play because there is already so much talent on this
right.
team. A different set of eyes, a different set of looks. things could be start going in the right direction sooner rather than later, and I think we're taking a step in the right movement there.
We want to talk about Pekka and his just phenomenal return from injury, and then as well an interesting NHL.com poll that came out this past week about most difficult buildings to play in, but we need to save that to the third segment because we need to talk to the Predators assistant general manager Jeff Kelty on the Preds official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back to the Predators official podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app, iTunes, Google Play, Android, you name it, we're there. Brooks Bratton alongside Thomas Willis. It's the portion of the show where you don't have to hear our voices for the entire segment. Somebody else will interject, and that person this week, Predators assistant general manager Jeff Kelty, who is stuck in a car in Toronto right now. Jeff, thanks for stopping by in the traffic.
No problem, guys. I got plenty of time. Stuck in traffic, like you said, in Toronto. So kind of no other way to travel up here. So.
Well, so this is kind of a treat for us because I feel like we only talked to you like in June, right before the draft. But yeah. It's November right now. So what are you doing in Toronto? What's going on right now?
Well, this particular weekend, I got up here yesterday. There's a really good schedule in the Ontario Hockey League this weekend. I was in Niagara last night. Tonight I'm headed to Guelph, Ontario, and then a couple of doubleheader games on Saturday and Sunday up here. So it's a good opportunity to really see a good chunk of the league here and just following guys for the draft. As you know, just from the different conversations that we've had over the years about the draft process and how it all works, as I've said, it really is a year-round process for us where guys are constantly tracking these players and monitoring their development. Hopefully, get our list right for the end of the year in June.
Jeff, if I can take you from one talking about a variety of prospects to one that's still on the mind of a lot of Preds fans and our listeners, Elli Tolvanen, can you officially take us through the process of what happened earlier this season when he didn't make the team? The opening night roster, he then is in Milwaukee. Like, how did that work? How did he respond to that? And what do you see from him in the short and long-term future?
Well, to give Elli a ton of credit, he's really been very professional about the whole situation. Everyone was well aware of the kind of the option that he had in his contract if he was not in the NHL to go back after 10 games, and he's come out and said that he's committed to being here and working at his game as a pro in North America. And just that alone, for a 19-year-old kid, I think to kind of have that perspective, to know that this really is what he needs, is to continue to adjust here and work on his game in North America. Like I said, you got to give him a lot of credit. He's going to be an outstanding offensive player for us. He's got all the tools. He's got a great shot. He can execute, make plays at that level. And I think it's just a matter of, like a lot of young players, just adjusting to the pace, the strength of the player, the smaller ice. Like, he's played in North America before in the USHL, but he hasn't played pro hockey in North America, where it's a bit different. You have less time to make plays. And he's working his way through that. The American Hockey League is a very difficult league to score and have success in. But I think that it's well documented the amount of time that a lot of pretty much all of our players in Nashville, and especially our top players, well documented the time that they've spent there has really helped develop them to the players that they are today. So he's right on that track. And, as I've told people, he'll dictate when he's ready. We want it to be as soon as possible. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we're doing the right things for his long-term development so that he has a great career with us, not just a great few games or one great season. We want him to develop the right way and be a real fixture for us as an offensive player.
So, Jeff, that you kind of brought it up, and I'm curious. So what are maybe some of the last couple of status reports that you've gotten on him, and do you think we could potentially see him in Nashville this season? Or, as you said, is he kind of going to dictate that? And if you guys don't think he's developmentally ready, then you're not going to rush anything yet. How do you see that playing out in the near future?
I think we could see that. I mean, that just speaks to the amount of natural talent that he does have. But there's a lot of things that go into that. There's how he's playing. There's what our situation is in Nashville with injuries and those sorts of things. You know, his game just continues to grow here. He's been a little bit snake bitten in terms of scoring, and that's what he does. He's a goal scorer. But he scored two goals last Sunday against Chicago, and the first one, the second one was an empty net, but the first one was, as I've termed it to a couple of people, that it was an Ellie Tolvanen type of goal. He comes across the blue line, uses the defenseman as a screen, and just rips a shot to the top corner, and that's what he can do with that shot of his. So it's just the typical things that you see with a lot of young players. It's learning to be consistent, learning to play with speed and pace all the time, and he's working his way through it. Like I said, it's a grind. You're not used to playing. I mean, he played a ton of games last year, but just the day in and day out, you know, they're down in Iowa right now. They have a tough game Wednesday, and they got another tough game there tonight, and then they bust to play again tomorrow. So he's been through a ton of experiences in his hockey career at a very young age. But like I said, this is all a little bit different, and he's adjusting and getting better all the time.
Predators assistant general manager Jeff Kelty is our guest here on the Preds official podcast. I mean, let's keep the player reviews, I guess, going. I don't know that we'd ask you this question at a different point in the season, but seeing as they're all in the lineup, they've all been playing, they've all been making an impact on the lineup. Can you review some of the free agents that you signed as an organization this past summer in a Zach Rinaldo, a Dan Hamhuis, and a Rocco Grimaldi? I think it's one of those things where you think of them as depth, but then we always say, oh, they could be in the NHL. Well, I mean, here they are now with the team battling with some injuries.
Yeah, they've all made their contributions in their various roles. You know, Ronaldo's been a pretty good fixture for us there on the fourth line. He's kind of, over the course of his career, kind of battled that kind of staying right on that line, not going over the edge too much. And he's done a good job at managing that. And like I said, been a good part of our fourth line, getting after people on the forecheck and chipping in here and there, but also bringing the physicality when the game calls for it. Hamhuis is just coming back from injury here, played his first game last night. But up until then, I think he was really starting to find his groove with us. I think the thought with signing him was just he's had a really long and career with a lot of different experiences, and though he's towards the end of his career, we had always thought that he'd be a good piece for us because he can play a little bit higher in your lineup, he can kill penalties, and he's, like I said, he's got that experience to handle different situations. So he's just getting back in the lineup here, and I think that he'll, once he gets his conditioning and his timing back and everything, he'll be a fixture for us. And Rocco Grimaldi, you know, we signed him in a, like I said, in like a depth role, but he's with the team right now, and he's chipped in for us with his time that he has spent in Nashville, scored a big goal the other night in San Jose, and he earned his call-up. He did exactly what you ask guys to do. He had a good camp. The numbers just didn't allow him to make our team out of camp because we have a good team and a deep team, but he went down to Milwaukee, and he was our best player down there, and he earned his call-up. He's got great speed. He attacks the game all the time. And with the game, the way the game is today, with how fast it is, he can come up and plug into your lineup. So he's been, you know, a really good piece for us in terms of depth. So, you know, it goes beyond that, even down into Milwaukee with some of the other guys like the Tenortis and Matt Donovans and those types of guys that we, like you said, we signed for depth. But they've, though you don't see all of it up in Nashville, they've all been really good pieces for our organization here and kind of helped things move along well down there as well.
So, Jeff, we know the Predators are doing well in the present, but people like yourself are always looking ahead to the future, too. You mentioned it. You're in Toronto. You're seeing a whole slew of Ontario Hockey League games, potentially looking at some draft-eligible players. What is your job like right around this time of the year? I know you're doing a lot of traveling, and you're pretty much watching a game almost every night to a point?
Not so much every night. I got to get home and see my wife and kids sometimes, you know.
Good man.
But, yeah, it's it's a similar schedule to what I've had, kind of shifting between, I'm obviously tracking players and scouting, doing my usual routine for the draft, and then at the same time kind of mixing in some pro scouting as well when it's called for. I mean, I think that one of the things that that I said with this job is that being involved with the what's going on the pro scouting side, a lot of times doing the amateurs kind of sets the foundation, because you really get a handle on all the players as they come up and through the draft, and then you continue to monitor them as they move on to their pro careers. But you get a good knowledge, a base knowledge of what the player's all about from the time that they're 17, 18 years old, and then it kind of helps you, I guess, keep track of them later on in their pro careers. But yeah, this is just, like I said before, you know, you don't really, in terms of the draft, you don't really see the fruits of it until the end of the year in June. But like I've always told you guys, anytime that we've talked, all of our staff is really working away right now, and the amount of miles and travel and the work these guys do is really, really amazing. And I know that you've talked to some of our guys, and you get a chance to hear the different stories of travel and where they first saw that player that's on our team now, and those kinds of things. Those are all things that are going on right now. You know, like I said, it shows up in June, but October, November, and then you get into the dog days in January, February, guys are working away at it. So I'm just doing the same thing the rest of our scouting staff is right now.
Finally, Jeff, I'll let you leave on this. I know you're in a newer role as the assistant general manager, but you've been around this organization for years and years. So I think you are one of the best people to be able to speak to what we've seen so far from this team. I know it's crazy to think we're already almost to the quarter point of the season. So I guess just simply speak to that. I mean, positives, negatives, where do you think this Predators team is? What would you like to see them do going forward?
Well, we all want to see us score on the power play a little bit more, but I think that, you know, I think we know that we have the personnel, and we know that it's just a matter of time. Power plays are any team, even the good power plays, they're streaky. And we know that we've got the personnel, and we know that we've had success there before. So I think that'll come around. As far as our team goes, I think that if you were to say that we were going to be at the tops of the standings heading into the week of U.S. Thanksgiving here, if you said that at the outset of training camp, of course you would have been happy. But I think that the really good thing for this team and this organization as a whole, and I was saying this to David the other day about the San Jose game, is, you know, it was right there for us, and we'd had a good road trip up to that point. But you're never satisfied, you know. When you have that lead late in the game, and a chance to get those 2 points, or at least get it to overtime, and get a chance to get the extra point in overtime, and then it slips away from you, you're not happy about it. But that's because the bar has been set so high, and I think that's a good thing. You know, we've seen some good things happen the last couple of years here, and those banners. Go to the Raptors there with the Western Conference from 2 years ago in the President's Trophy this past season, but as we've all said, we want that one last banner. And I think that all the wins and success during the regular season, it's all great, but we have that high expectation, right? And like I said, I think that's a really good sign for our organization.
Predators assistant general manager Jeff Kelty stuck in traffic in Toronto. Hopefully you get out at some point in time to have some turkey on Thanksgiving, but thank you for taking the time. We certainly appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me on.
The Predators official podcast continues in just a moment as we discuss what's really on everyone's mind, Thanksgiving. We'll be back in just a moment on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Preds official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Thomas Willis alongside Brooks Bratton, Josh Upton behind the controls, bringing down New From Need to Breathe, their live acoustic version of White Fences. Check it out. Pretty great.
Brooks, we've got a live audience.
Can you hear the crowd? They're excited. We should start doing the show live in front of fans.
One day.
One day.
You got to have dreams, kids.
So I asked you before if there was a Thanksgiving song we needed to bring back this segment to. It actually leads into my point in the next segment for the Twitter questions that there are not Thanksgiving carols that we're singing right
now.
There
really aren't, but Christmas.
But Christmas.
It's coming.
Yeah, it's coming.
Prepare yourself.
We'll get to that in a moment, but let's talk a little more hockey talk before we go too far off the rails. And I wanted to touch on this. On NHL.com earlier this week, they released a player survey. And so they talked to roughly 60 NHL players. And the simple question was, what's the most difficult arena to play in? And I think this backs up what we've said already in the previous 9 episodes of this podcast. Overwhelmingly, the answer was 15 of those players voted Bridgestone Arena, home, of course, of the Nashville Predators, as the most difficult place to play. Now, a lot of arenas got like one vote, so I think it skews it a little bit. But in second place, only got 6 votes, and that was Bell MTS Place, which always changes around. And I always say it wrong, so that's Winnipeg.
In the Peg.
And then Pittsburgh also tied with 6 votes at PPG Paints Arena. So nearly, not nearly, more than doubled the team in second place did Nashville and Bridgestone Arena. And as far as some of the reasons, I thought this was cool. Patrick Kane, of course, the Chicago Blackhawks, said, "I feel like the crowd is so loud that it's always a tough team to play there. It seems like they have that bass jacked up. That building's always bouncing."
I mean, I've seen my water bottle vibrate on the press box bench before, so I know that there's a lot of bass going on. You can feel it. No, I mean, it is cool. It's one thing for us to say it, and it's one thing to hear our players say it, but to hear opposing players say, yeah, coming into Bridgestone, I remember the quote that we've used a lot was from Ken Hitchcock when he was coaching the St. Louis Blues and said, going into if you can go into Bridgestone on a Saturday night and win, that's saying something. It is a tough place to play for other teams as well. And you and I have traveled to pretty much every rink in the National Hockey League. And yes, I get that we're biased, but there really isn't another rink from our experience. Mm-hmm. Winnipeg is loud, as the players said. Yeah. Vegas was pretty loud when I was there last season. But there aren't a lot of rinks in that upper echelon as far as just pure crowd noise as Bridgestone. And so, yeah, we're very lucky to have the atmosphere that we have, and that's all thanks to you, Smashville.
Right, and I think the 2 points that they were looking at is quality of team, which, of course, the Preds have been one of the best teams in the NHL the last 5 years. And then, like you mentioned, the fans, the ambience, that sort of thing. From the NHL.com article, I think this is worth quoting as well. They said, "The home of the Nashville Predators is famous for its boisterous fans, live concerts during intermissions, honky-tonk atmosphere, and the occasional celebratory catfish tossed from the crowd." So, pretty cool. And the reason we bring that up is 7 out of the next 8 games for this Preds team are at home. So, I think that's very much an opportunity where you could see them not only respond to a road trip that didn't end quite the way that they wanted to, but also the haters, if you will, from earlier in the season of, oh, this home record's not as good as it could be. Yeah, I think it's going to get right back up there. Secondly, before we get to Thanksgiving, Pecorini, we just had to take a moment to touch on him. I know that his last 2 games will stand as losses, one, of course, in a shootout, which is fluky. It's a breakaway competition. But since he's returned from injury, he's made 5 starts. Do you know how many goals he's allowed in those 5 starts combined?
Not a whole heck of a lot, Thomas.
5. So, 1 goal. And, of course, one of them was a shutout. He is now first in the NHL in save percentage with .948. He's first by a wide margin in goals against average, 1.53. So, of course, how many goals on average he's allowing a game. So, nearly 1. And then the team overall with the Preds, 2.26, is allowing the fewest goals. So, the defense is right up there. And I just think that's worth commenting, because I know back even episode 2 when we had Elliot Friedman on the show of Sportsnet, he said, I think one of the biggest questions for this team is who's their goaltender long term. Mm-hmm. Boy, it sure looks like it's Pecorine.
36-year-old Pecorine, by the way. The save in Anaheim, you know which one I'm talking about.
Oh, for sure.
Let me just throw my blocker up into oblivion and toss my stick and hit Matthias Ekholm in the head while I'm at it. Sorry, Matthias. But
in my defense, I made a similar move when a wasp landed on my back once. I think that's how I responded, by throwing my arms. Now, I wasn't trying to save a goal from going in.
So I was actually sitting next to Predators goaltending coach Ben Vanderklok in the press box during that game. And a 1-1, right? Was it a 1-1 game at that point?
Like, oh, it was like 2 minutes left. Would have won the game.
Like 2 minutes
Ducks.
Left in the game. Yeah. And of all the people that should be on pins and needles, Ben Vanderklok turns to me and goes, yeah, we've been working on that for a year. Very facetiously. It was fantastic.
All right. Before we come to you again for a new episode of the POP, we're going to have that phenomenal holiday.
Thanksgiving will have passed already.
Thanksgiving will have passed. All right, let's go for fun. Let's go quick. Let's hear your power rankings for your side dishes. Because, well, you know what? Let's backtrack. Turkey only? Do you allow ham in a Thanksgiving meal?
No, I do not allow ham like you knew, Thomas.
I knew you were going to.
I only allow turkey. Ham is for Christmas.
So I...
But I know you don't like turkey that much.
And I'm not going to fight you on that because I know that traditionally it is turkey. And so we just do both. Sure. And I think that's allowed.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear the side dishes.
Side dishes, it's my entire life, it's been mashed potatoes. Number one, gravy. I don't need gravy on my mashed potatoes.
No
gravy. Just the creamier, the better. You want to throw...
I was going to say skins or garlic or buttery.
Not a lot of skins. Yep. As much garlic, you want to smash some garlic cloves? Absolutely.
Let's do it.
You want to throw 4 sticks of butter? You want to throw a pack of cream cheese in there?
Sure.
Go for it. So mashed potatoes, I'm going to have at least 3 or 4 helpings of mashed potatoes. Something that you might not agree with is I've started eliminating dinner rolls from my Thanksgiving plate because all dinner rolls do is take up room that should be reserved for mashed potatoes and green bean casserole while I'm at it.
Josh is my witness on this. He just raised a finger at me and his voice to say I shouldn't be eating rolls at Thanksgiving. What gives you the right,
well,
sir?
Well, but Thomas's plate... Okay, so our listeners need to know, and you may remember this from the salad escapades earlier with the fantasy football. Thomas's ideal plate is the color gold.
Yes.
Ham.
I bleed gold.
Potatoes.
I bleed gold. I eat gold.
Macaroni and cheese, corn, dinner rolls. But you do have salad on Thanksgiving, don't you now?
I do. Now, it may not meet everyone's criteria of salad because it consists of Jell-O strawberries, pretzels, and like a cream cheese filling.
Salad.
Salad, if you will.
As I do my air
which
quotes.
I will.
Salad.
Sure,
yes.
But, you know, trying to get back on the health kick, eating salad on Thanksgiving.
Sure. So you're a Big Mac and cheese guy, of course.
Macaroni and cheese. I know that's more of a Southern thing, but... Yep. It should be. I would very much agree with you on the mashed potatoes. I will say, as long as it's not chunky, cranberry sauce. I actually did very much enjoy that on Thanksgiving.
No,
I thought you might disagree with that.
Well, and something that I would think would be right up your alley with the bread.
Yeah.
I love stuffing. You're not really a stuffing guy, are you?
Yeah, well, again, because I'm probably eating ham instead of turkey.
Okay. No, that's fair.
I mean, call me weird, but yeah.
You've got your ham and your dinner rolls. I've got my turkey and my crap that was in the turkey.
In the final few seconds, let me tell a funny story on myself. So my wife, Elizabeth, said, I can't think about dinner. I'm not doing it. So I stepped in and I ordered Cracker Barrel to go and took it to the house on my way home the other day. And I had ordered mashed potatoes as one of my sides.
Yep.
And there was another person eating, my brother-in-law was eating with us as well. So there were like 3 other meals. So I had my macaroni and cheese.
Biscuits or corn muffins are one of these.
Biscuits, not even close.
Okay, fine,
not
whatever.
Even a question.
Weirdo.
So I've eaten the macaroni and cheese, and I'm like, these potatoes look a little weird or whatever, but I know I ordered them. They're in a separate thing. Just take a big old bite out of it. I was like, man, that consistency seemed weird. It was my brother-in-law's gravy for his chicken. So I have tried gravy.
Oh, delicious.
I was like, wow.
I drank it, as a matter of fact. Mashed potatoes, green bean casserole, and stuffing for me. That's what I'm going back for seconds and thirds and fourths of. And pumpkin pie.
There you go. Well, whatever you're doing this Thanksgiving, Smashville, I hope you take a moment to pause, be thankful for your family, and disregard Brooks and eat a whole lot of rolls. The Preds official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game wraps up after the break with details on how you can win our weekly giveaway. Plus, we'll answer your Twitter questions. That's all coming up next.
Doesn't that just sound like autumn? I'm a very seasonal playlist maker.
It sounds like a pleasant autumn, one that we have not been able to experience very much the last 2 weeks. As a native Nashvillian, I do not respond well to cold temperatures. I'll admit it.
Now that I live in Nashville, I don't. As a northerner, I used to be fine.
We've
now
softened
that I'm
you
here,
up,
I'm like,
I'm pretty proud of that. We've softened you up
well
pretty
done.
Well.
Death Cap.
We're still working on sweet tea, though, but...
Nope, never.
We'll get there.
Death Cap for Cutie. Welcome back to the Predators official podcast. The final segment of episode 10 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brooks Bratton and Thomas Willis alongside you here. Bringing you home, it's time for our contest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we teased this at the start of the show. I didn't want to give it away yet because this is pretty cool, I think. Not one, but 2 prizes. So 2 separate winners this week, I suppose.
Yeah.
We have 2 autographed David Poile USA Hockey caps. So we're giving away actual hats, actual mm-hmm. lids this week.
Yeah.
Autographed by Predators General Manager David Poile, who will, of course, be inducted into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame coming up in December.
December 12th.
December 12th mm-hmm. at the JW Marriott here in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
This is a pretty cool prize, though. So he's
he's
getting the word out. He's been doing a lot of interviews. We'll have plenty of content in the weeks to come on NashvillePredators.com. Ways that you can find out how to win the hats. You can order tickets as well.
Right.
To the event.
That's what I was going to say. I would say even the avid autograph collector probably doesn't have a David Boyle autograph, or if he or she does, not very many. So, again, pretty special. The reason we promote it is, again, as you mentioned, he will be inducted into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame coming up here. If you want to ensure that you get a hat with an autograph, if you don't want to run the risk of submitting through the contest, which the way that you do that, before I breeze over it, all you got to do, hashtag Preds Podcast on Twitter. Just that's our hashtag. That's how we see your questions. That's how you engage with us.
Make sure you're following both of us.
Well, sure. Just tweet your power rankings for Thanksgiving side dishes. We had a lot of fun talking about that in our last segment. So, yeah, nothing challenging here. Just let us know why macaroni and cheese is number one overall. And then we'll give you a David Boyle USA Hockey hat, or at least be entered into the drawing. But
I want to see my fellow Idaho potato eaters.
If you want to be insured that you're going to get one, this offer is one of many Gold Friday offers that are coming up. This has become an annual tradition.
What's Gold Friday, you say?
What's
Thomas?
Gold Friday, you ask? Well, it is more of a state of mind than an actual day, because starting next week on Monday, Pred season ticket citizens will have early access to this sale, where you're going to get up to 50% off Preds tickets, Bridgestone Arena shows, the big one, the Predators team store this year. More on that is coming later next week, but then you'll be able to go to the Predators team store at like 8 a.m. and get 50% off everything in the store for the first hour. It's going to be like you see at a Target or a Walmart, where everyone just goes running towards the stores. That's happening on Gold Friday, November the 23rd. But you can shop online for much more than that, especially if you're a season ticket citizen. And then that rolls into Saber Monday, Cyber Monday to you lay folk. But anyways, that's one of the offers. If you buy tickets to see David Poyle elected in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, you will get not only an autographed hat that we are giving away to promote that, but additionally, you'll get a What Would David Poyle Do t-shirt.
Darn right you will.
Wow.
And hopefully things are a little more tame down at 501 Broadway than they are at the big box stores.
Yeah, please treat each other with respect. But no, in all seriousness, this is my fifth season with the team. This is definitely one of the best offers that we've had, especially with all these games being sold out recently. Another big one to touch on is all the single game tickets for the second half of the season. Those will go on sale outside of the Golden Game. So you have an opportunity to buy and to go along with that. How to do that? NashvillePredators.com/ Thank you, Josh. NashvillePredators.com/Gold Friday. It's that simple. NashvillePredators.com/Gold Friday. I knew you were going to do that. Anyways, we had a lot of Twitter questions. Too many Twitter questions.
I didn't even ask for them this week.
So let's get right into them in the minutes that we have remaining in the broadcast to answer your questions. Just like you enter the contest, that's how you ask questions throughout the week. Hashtag Preds Podcast. Kick us off.
So Wade would like to know, how do the players know when to make a line change? When they get tired? Are they getting yelled at from the bench? Is coach just like screaming his head off, like, get off the ice, Ryan, you're done?
Well, so I will say, number one, as an adult league hockey player, I apparently never learned this lesson because my shifts are too long.
Thomas to Brooks, king of the 4-minute shift over here, Thomas Willis.
Hey, you know, I need to get my points.
Uh-huh.
I need quantity, not quality.
Meanwhile, I'm like 45 seconds. Get me out of here.
So, but in all seriousness, it's very much matters where the puck is on the ice for starters. So you're not gonna, of course, line change while the puck's in your defensive zone or when an odd man rush is happening. So that's why you'll see players dump in the puck every now and then. 45 seconds is pretty much the average NHL shift. There are times when the coach will call for it. I think Lavi's words, reload, perhaps?
Well, that's usually on the back check. You can hear yelling from the bench, the reload. But especially the guys know how to change. When you're at home, you get the final change.
Right.
So between that on the face-offs, you can see who the away team puts out first. Then the home team has that option. Or then when play is going on, so say, for example, Laviolette wants that first line out there. He'll say, Joey's line, you're going. They go out. If he wants Kyle Turris's line out there next, he's saying second line, Turri's line, you guys are next. And you know, if you're Kevin Fiala, you're going on for whoever
your winger.
It's a one for one. If you're Kyle Turris, you're going as soon as Ryan Johansson comes back. You're trading that centerman, that wing for wing. Same thing on defense as well.
Right, and that's why you'll hear lines referred to a lot as Johansson's line, Turris's line, because the wings are assumed that they know where to go. And like you said, as a left wing, I'm watching the left wing in front of me so that when the puck's in the right place on the ice and when it's been about 45 seconds, I know to go for it. I'll go give one more and say, so Kevin McCarthy, the Predators' associate coach, he's now managing the defense. So that's why he's on the side of the defenseman. He's managing them. He's giving extra attention, letting them know when to go, what matchups he wants. And then likewise, Dan Muse is doing the very same for the forwards. So Peter Laviolette's actually a bit in more of a oversight kind of management role. That's the way I'd put it. And then, yes, the kind of fine-tuned details are for Muse and McCarthy to manage.
I feel bad for the left wing who's coming out after you, waiting ever so patiently.
Just taking their time.
Jacob's next.
Jacob wants to ask, he said his first home game at Bridgestone was the Jets shutout on October the 11th. He had a blast. Is there any specific team we enjoy watching at Bridgestone Arena, or a specific promo night or time of the year? Playoffs must be fun. I mean, wow, Jacob.
Playoffs are great.
Many a question. Playoffs are the best.
I don't know. The Central Division matchups are always fun, especially in Winnipeg in the last couple of years as that rivalry has gone up. Chicago games are always fun. There always seems to be a little bit more energy in the building. The atmosphere ramps up a little bit. I'm originally from Pittsburgh. Don't hold that against me, but I do like when the Penguins come into town to see that. My parents come down sometimes. We've converted them now, thankfully.
Jeez.
But
took 5 years.
That's Susan. For real, Susan. I know she's listening. Sorry, Mom. But it took a while, but yeah, so those are always fun games for me too.
For me, I would say Tampa Bay Lightning, because they're fun to see from the Eastern Conference. Connor McDavid with the Edmonton Oilers, that's always fun to watch. And then I would agree within it, the Central Division, just because they matter so much. And boy, have we seen that recently with the Minnesota Wild coming on. They're almost tied with the Preds in points. So those matchups are going to be more entertaining so far. And then he mentioned the Winnipeg Jets. That's about as good as it gets in Smashville. Hayden says, not necessarily a hockey question, but do you have any tips on how I could start pursuing my dream as a sports journalist?
Right.
Yeah. We actually had a group of college students in the other day, and I said, you're going to hate to hear this, but you need to be able to formulate your thoughts and then be able to communicate them on paper or in an email. And I hate to say this, but when you commit a typo or mistake, that matters. People notice.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yep. When you get a misspelled word on your resume, it's a big no-no. But yeah, write, watch games. If it's hockey that you love, if whatever sport it is, watch the games, write about the games, broadcast about the games if you like. You can do that in the comfort of your own living room. Practice.
Absolutely. Here comes our second question with a bit of tone, shall we say. Steven says, when is it socially acceptable to decorate for Christmas inside and out? I do both the classic way, day after Thanksgiving.
Darn right you do, Steven.
But some lunatics think earlier is acceptable. Thoughts.
I think your wife might take exception to being called a lunatic.
So, Steven, let me speak to you here. I would say this, and I actually gave this some thought on the drive over to the studio. I don't have much of a leg to stand on. I get what you're saying. Thanksgiving matters. But I would say this. Christmas, as a society, we do no holiday better than we do Christmas as a society. And I would honestly say that it is expanded to the point that I just cannot contain it within the 25 to 30 days that I get. Now, I don't think that hurts Thanksgiving at all, because on Thanksgiving, I will love it. I will eat mini rolls. I will eat macaroni and cheese. My fantasy football team will crush yours. Yes, we're playing on Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll move on to Christmas. But you know what? If a day comes up, as it already has, and I want to listen to Christmas music, I'm allowed to do that. And I will not be called a lunatic or feel bad because of it.
Steven, I'm a big Black Friday. Like, Thanksgiving's done. Okay, now it's Black Friday. Now I'm putting up the Christmas lights. Now I'm spinning the Christmas playlist, which we will do on the next podcasts coming up. We're playing Christmas music.
Yes. Yes. Like, I would just say, like, No need to judge. No need to hate on other people. You know, like, if somebody wants to listen to a Christmas song or celebrate the reason for the season, like, let them do it.
It is the most wonderful time of the year. But, Steven, I'm with you on that.
I'll close on this. Jim Gaffigan, the comedian, always says, you know, what should we do for Thanksgiving? And he says, why don't we just eat a lot and be annoyed at our relatives? And like, we do that every day. We'll call it Thanksgiving. Okay, let's do it. So, anyways, Thanksgiving's not much of a holiday. It's good, but Christmas is better. I'll leave Lee on that. For Brooks Braddon, you can follow him on Twitter at Brooks Braddon. For me, I'm at Tom A. Willis. Make sure to follow at Preds NHL. They're the best place to see Preds content, all the articles we mentioned that Brooks writes. They're also the way to get to Gold Friday. So check out those sales. This has been another episode of the Preds official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. For more, go to nashvillepredators.com/podcast. Thanks to Jeff Kelty for joining us earlier on the show. We're live on all your podcast delivery services, so check us out there. Again, nashpreds.com/podcast. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you next week.
Gobble, gobble.